You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
On Florida's Space Coast, we think you can have the best of both worlds. Kind of like right now. Driving at your desk. Maybe at the gym. But you're also grooving to some music. Visit us and you'll go to the beach. And see a rocket launch. Or go kayaking and manatee spotting. It's all waiting for you on the only beach that doubles as a launch pad. Plan your adventure today at visitspacecoast.com.
Matthew, firstly, if I can go there, in our view, hasn't done enough. He certainly hasn't done enough over probably quite a few test matches now. I'm not being unfair to him. He would recognise that fact as well. He's holding down a batting position, number five. Sure, he put his hand up to have a crack up the top of the order, but holding down a specialist batting position hasn't quite done enough. And as a senior player, we expect a little bit more. In Travis's case, he to us has a little bit more upside, and we have given him a bit of a vote of confidence to try to win his spot back in that batting lineup.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Cricket Unfiltered podcast. I'm your co-host, Menners, and that was the Australian Chairman of Selectors, Trevor Holmes, speaking after the Test squad to South Africa and the T20 squad to New Zealand were both announced. Joining me as ever today on his own is Paul the Summer Game Dennett. Paul, how are you?
Hey, Menners. I'm good. It seems so quick. The summer has come and gone in terms of the international men's season. Last week we were still high on the exciting result. But I just look back, it's 54 days that the summer lasted. And I haven't checked every season, but to the best of my knowledge, that is the shortest gap from day one of the international men's season till the last day since the season of 1973-74, when we only played a three-test match series and no one-dayers for the whole summer against New Zealand. That was 34 days. So obviously there's reasons for it, but it does seem as though the international season's getting shorter and shorter.
Yep, I think the season's getting longer and longer. We've still got weeks left of the Big Bash and the Shield and then the state one-day comp. So I can see a lot of cricket on the horizon. Just for all the listeners wondering out there where maybe Jaleesa Apps is. So as they say, revenge is a dish best served cold. And Jaleesa slid into our DMs late last night and said she was unable to attend today's recording. So I guess it's one all in the axing stakes. Hello to Jaleesa if you're listening. Thanks for the late notice. All right, now, we have a big show today. We have Pete Lawler joining us from The Australian, and we have Lisa Griffiths joining us, who is a Sydney Sixers and New South Wales Breakers player, and she's going to talk about the New South Wales coaching apprenticeship program that's been put about for three female coaches. So that's all to come, but let's get straight into it and give Pete Lawler a call from The Australian.
Hello, hello.
Hello, is this the host of the Cricket Etc. podcast? This is Manners from the Cricket Unfiltered show, your former podcast.
Never heard of you. Never heard of you, mate. Never heard of you.
Well, you're online.
What do you do?
Well, we just talk cricket, not as well as you and Gideon, of course, but I'm here with Paul.
Hi, Pete.
Hey, Paul. How are you, mate?
Good, mate. How are you?
Yeah, good. You're sounding better than him. You've got the better microphone, Paul.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Well, now, Pete, tell me, how are you going with the podcast, Cricket Etc.?
Oh, well, it's nice just to have a chance to chat to Gideon constantly, isn't it? You know, not that we don't chat enough, but in fact, this series we haven't actually had a chance to chat because we've only been together for two tests. So, yes, it's been nice to have that connection with my colleague and good friend.
Yeah, and I would thoroughly recommend all the listeners of Cricket Unfiltered, when they've listened to our show, yours is the best dessert, the best dessert every week.
Well, we can only aspire towards your consistency, and you cut a path for those of us who follow you. We stand on the shoulders of giants.
Well, you don't have to stand very high.
Menes is nodding when you're saying that. He completely agrees with you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Enough about us.
Straight into the news. So just before we gave you a call, two squads have been announced. The Australian Men's T20 Tour of New Zealand squad, the International Aussie squad, and then the Australian Men's Test Tour of South Africa. Obviously, I guess there's a couple of one big exclusion from the test squad. We see Matthew Wade's been axed and he'll be vice-captaining the white ball squad. I don't think there's any real surprise there. I sort of feel like Wade was given enough chances and couldn't quite nail that test spot.
No, that was signaled a week or so ago, I think, that he was going to miss out. So I wasn't surprised by that, no. But they haven't done a press conference yet, have they? But Is he in as a reserve wicketkeeper or is he in as a batsman? I'm not quite sure.
In the T20I squad?
Yeah.
Well, they've got Phillippe and McDermott. So I guess Wade will be a top-order player with so many of the top-order batters in the test squad. He'll probably be up the top with Finchie.
Yeah, so that's the sort of signal that he's certainly on the way out of test consideration, isn't he? We may not see him in a test team again. Interesting that they replaced him with Alex Carey. What do you read into that?
Well, I think it's a couple of things. Firstly, I think it's putting Tim Payne on a little bit of notice that Carey's going to be sort of breathing down his neck now for that test spot. And I think it's also, a sign that Carey, they see as being, a really vital part of the team and squad going forward.
Yeah, it would seem like he's the heir apparent, isn't it? It's come with a very strong endorsement of Tim Payne, hasn't it, from Oliver, Ben Oliver, the cricket executive general manager, blah, 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 cricket teams. Yeah, and it needed to, didn't it? Because otherwise it just looked a little odd. It would have looked a little odd, I reckon, to have him shadowing Tim in that squad.
But, Pete, you've done enough of these. Isn't it always the way with football clubs and all that? You give a strong endorsement and then a couple of weeks later you sack him?
Yeah, that's when you have the endorsement of the board. That's when you really know you're in trouble. If you've got the complete backing of the board, you may as well just get a cardboard box and go home, I reckon. Yeah, well, it would be ridiculous. I mean, I don't think Tim Payne can afford to. I don't think he can afford to have a bad series in South Africa. But I found the pylon a little bit over the top on Tim Payne, frankly. He was one of the better performed bats in this series. In fact, I think he probably was the third highest contributor, wasn't he, with the bat?
Yep. I was going to send out on TikTok my combined side of the series, but I realised I would have to include Tim Payne as a specialist batsman in it, and I just thought I'm going to get so much angst from people I couldn't be bothered doing it.
They had a bad series, but it all comes down on Tim Payne, which is interesting, isn't it? I think Ian Chappell made a very good point. If you have such an all-controlling cup, that is why the captain should run the team, not the coach.
Yeah, it feels like Langer kind of runs the team at the moment.
Well, he certainly runs it off the field, doesn't he? He's the most powerful coach that Australian cricket's ever known, isn't he? He's sort of Bob Simpson on steroids. he's got three teams. He's a micromanager, and I don't sort of say that in a negative way, but he probably could sort of step back a little bit from all the things he's across. But I think it's a pretty sort of complementary relationship in that it allowed Tim to concentrate on what is, you know, one of the bigger asks in cricket, isn't it, to be the captain and keeper. You don't usually see that in Australian cricket. So it's a big job just to keep you're keeping up, you're batting up.
Haven't we seen then, Pete, that it actually is too big a job? Like, we can say everything we like about what a good job Payne's done, but I just think those last day of test matches in England and this summer have shown that it really is tough being a keeper and marshalling your troops. I mean, quite practically, if you're a batter, when you're in the field, you're not batting. So you can just be the captain.
Yeah, it got to him on those days, on those 5 days. But what's the alternative?
Well, that's the issue.
Yeah, there's no better alternative, is there? And let's not forget, he has done a fantastic job up to this point. A couple of bad days on the field, but, ordinary days. But he's done a fantastic job. He and Langer have been the right people in the right spot for the period that we've been through. There's no doubt about it. And I don't think Tim Payne's got any concerns at the moment in the short term, but it goes to highlight how difficult that job he does is. And you only find that out, don't you, when you're under massive pressure.
I agree. And I also agree that...
Ideally, your keeper's not a captain. You know, ideally.
Yeah, and maybe if Labuschagne was 2 years older or if things had been a little bit different, maybe. But I still think that at the moment he's the logical captain. I think that Langer is a good coach, and I think he's an excellent coach. The one thing that concerns me slightly, and I don't know what you guys think of that, but when I watched the test documentary, it seemed as though the emphasis was on motivation, running through brick walls, really, you know, giving everything for the jersey, which I support. There didn't seem to be all that much on the kind of nerdy statistician side of things. I know that Dean Hills is there, but some of the PowerPoint presentations, to me, they looked quite simplistic. Is there a need for someone, a real kind of cricket analyst who possibly has never played the game at a high level, coming in and improving the smarts of the side?
Well, I mean, you only saw what the producers decided was interesting, didn't you, in the test? So we don't know how much of that stuff goes on, but they were outplanned.
By India, yeah.
By India in this one, weren't they? I mean, I found the Ashwin videos really good. I don't know what goes on. I think they rate Dean Hills pretty highly. They've got a lot of... But there was something I was going to say here. God, my brain. Sorry, guys. This four-test series, thank God it wasn't a full summer. It would have killed me.
So just on this test squad to South Africa, the other big one is Mark Steckerty from Queensland getting the call up. I know there's a few other bowlers coming back from injury, in particular Jai Richardson, but that's a big call up for Steckerty. I don't think anyone would have had him in this test squad.
Yeah, I know what I wanted to say. Sorry, guys, I lost the flow here, but I thought it was important. If you don't have Tim Payne, everybody, what does everyone say? Oh, let's get Pat Cummins in the job. I mean, imagine a bowler on the fifth day of a test match trying to stay on top of everything. And also remember that the bowler doesn't actually field in the circle, do they? Yeah. You can't captain a team from fine legs.
Yeah, I think Cummins is not the solution.
Yeah.
I think
no, he's not
Steve
the solution
Smith.
Either. That was it, yeah.
Steve
I knew
Smith.
I knew I had a good point somewhere. Yeah, well, I don't know, mate. If you see how quickly the walls came crashing down on Australia over Tim Payne calling Ashwin a dickhead, like, prepare yourself, because if Steve Smith is the captain, the walls will come down every time they look sideways.
That's right. Stuff the rest of the world. I think we've got to be a bit belligerent now.
Yeah, that's it. Steckerty was interesting. Well, I thought Jai Richardson was in the test squad. He was the one that surprised me that they sent him to the T20.
Well, he just hasn't played any Shield cricket this summer, so I don't think he's got enough overs under the belt.
Yeah, I suppose that's the answer to it, isn't it? Yeah.
Came back from his shoulder.
You know, I'm hearing that they're trying to put the Shield summer back together without bubbles. They won't be using the biosecurity bubbles. I don't know if that's right or wrong. Maybe you guys have heard something that I haven't. But,
well, no, I think the rest of the Shield schedule's out, and it's people playing at home. Like the New South Wales are due to host a home game in sort of mid to late February.
Yeah, and it's going to be done like they're normal citizens, you know, and they're just going to try and get around the border and arrangements where they can.
I think that makes sense.
Yeah, Have you seen much of Steckity play?
Yeah, just what we've seen in the Shield and in the Big Bash. He's a good bowler, and he bowled well in the Adelaide games. But, you know, if we're sort of talking quality, if Jai Richardson was fit, you'd definitely have him ahead.
Yeah, so it's probably not a bad idea, is it, to use Jai Richardson in the T20 because he doesn't have the miles in his legs.
With that, an alien looking down would say, wait a minute, there's a World Cup in T20 cricket in a few months' time. And I know there was zero consideration of this, but it's worth saying, I think, why didn't they pick the T20 side first and say, in years to come, no one's going to remember who won this Australia-South Africa series. If we ever eventually want to win in the format of the game that the rest of the world cares about, we should prioritise it for once.
Do you want to stay friends, mate?
No. I'm sort of arguing against myself. I will remember who wins the Australia-South Africa series. I'm sort of saying...
Paul told me he doesn't care about the Test Championship before you got on. He doesn't care about...
Oh, I would be screaming the house down if that happened.
So would I.
Yeah.
But I'm saying the T20 is the future of the game. It is. It irks me that people from India, if you say, who won the 2007 World Cup, they'll say, we did. We beat Pakistan in the final, because they've already kind of put it on a platform with the 50-over World Cup.
I'm sorry. I just disagree totally. I don't think that T20 is the future of the game. T20 might be the big money-spinning bloody carnival on the outskirts, but the peak of cricket will always be Test matches. And if you ask players through time, that they will always aspire to play Test match cricket. That will always be the ultimate form of cricket.
I hope so. And I don't know if that's necessarily true in many countries of the world now.
Well, there's not a lot of countries play Test cricket.
No, but I'm saying in the West Indies or...
T20 might be more popular, you know, and it might thrive everywhere. But Test cricket will always be the supreme form. Even countries that don't play Test cricket, I imagine, aspire to play Test cricket if they could.
That's right. And you look at the power of that last day at the Gabba. I mean, that captivated the whole world, the whole sporting world. And I don't think a T20 can bring in the world like a good Test match can. There's just something about them.
Oh, of course. I mean, I love Test cricket more than any other form. I'm just sort of saying we wouldn't have even given it consideration to prioritise the T20 when, you know, the way that the rest of the world looks at it, we've never yet won a T20 World Cup, and we consistently deprioritise that format of the international game, which that's the choice that we've made. But it might look peculiar to other countries. I don't know.
I think that India would set Test cricket as its primary form, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a way to go.
India's the country that has the IPL, and it generates, you know, if you believe that survey, $1 in $3 in cricket is generated by the IPL. But all that said and done, you know, still the core business is Test match cricket. And ask the players, and they would say that too.
Mm. Now, speaking of Test match cricket, Australia may have unearthed a new leg spinner. Tanvir Sanger has been called up from the Thunder for the T20 squad, but he looks like a real find. He's been called up. Ashton Turner's been repicked, but I think Tanvir Sanger is the one to watch in this T20 tour.
Do you think he'll get a game? He's 19 years old, isn't he? He doesn't have much experience. He's never played for his state, has he? So it'll be a bit like David Warner, won't it, that he might actually end up playing for his country before he plays for his state.
Yeah, I think they should give him a go. He turns the ball more than Zampa. He obviously doesn't have the control Zampa has, but I think we've seen that Australia needs to start looking for a wrist spinner to give them more options in all forms of the game.
Yeah. I mean, if one came along, I'm sure they'd leap on them, but they never come along, do they? And what you often see with wrist spinners, isn't it, that people get really excited about them when they're 19, but it takes a lot longer to go that extra leg, doesn't it, and to become a bowler who can actually, it's all very well, too, to do it in the limited over format, which peculiarly enough tend to favour spinners and wrist spinners because people are looking to score runs. But once you go up to first class cricket and Test cricket, you've got to be. It takes a bit more skill than that, doesn't it? A bit more skill and a bit more consistency.
Definitely. What do you think of the chances of Australia actually going to South Africa? Do you think they'll make it?
I think that they have to go. They are compelled to go if you want other countries to tour here. you have to tour there. There's a lot of flapping of the arms. I think a lot of the medical advice is basically don't go. So they're trying to put in all sorts of belts and braces, sort of conditions around the tour, which is fair enough too. But, you know, and you can't say we can't go because it's too dangerous when you went to the UK in the middle of the year, and the UK has one of the highest fatality rates in the world from COVID, and it's an absolute disaster. I mean, South Africa is possibly more dangerous and a little looser, and the England tour fell apart, didn't it? But for various reasons, I think they kind of used COVID as an excuse in the end because they just wanted to go home. And I think the players are half hoping that it will be cancelled because they're just tired. They're wrung out after that summer. I mean, the South African tour is always a practice tour, and part of that reason I reckon is because the players are exhausted after an Australian summer. But you've got to go. You've got to make the effort, yeah.
It's interesting. I mean, the thing with the England tour was that it did coincide with that lull where it was kind of between the first and the second waves, and I think they felt that the ECB's bubble was so bulletproof that they felt safe. I sort of think that they, if I was having to go now, I would feel pretty nervous about going.
Yeah, hey, I wouldn't go, but I'm not trying to keep Test cricket alive. I'm just a hack, you know, who's sitting at the typewriter. I'm of that age where if I get it, I'm screwed for it. but if you want to keep Test cricket alive, you can't expect people to do you favours if you don't do them favours. Mm. And you go, it's safer here. And then they go, part of it is, you don't want to do the quarantine when you get back. I get that. But, you know, India didn't want to jump through all the hoops that it had to jump through to do this tour either, but it did it. So you just got to suck it up, don't you?
Yeah, and Australia need to go and win and get to the final of the Test Championship, as Paul said.
Yeah. And look, and I would completely understand if, say, Mitchell Stark said, you know what, I'm not doing this tour. Give me a break, you know, I've got other stuff going on, you know. He's got issues at home or whatever. I get that. I don't think players would be too harshly judged if they didn't do it. Because they are being asked so much at the moment, they're having their lives turned upside down to keep the game going. But I think that Australia, it's incumbent on Australia to send a squad to South Africa.
Yeah, and it'll be a cracking series, no doubt. Always is between Australia and South Africa.
Oh, it's the best tour. It's the best tour. I mean, yeah. Have you ever done one?
No, I've never been to South Africa.
We've talked about doing it, and we've just never... Never got around. I'd love to do this one. It might be a bit hard.
Hey, we might have an there. Exclusive.
Yeah, exactly. I'll put my hand up.
We could be the Barat of the South African tour. Everyone will be calling us.
the token Aussie. Yeah. It'll be very good.
Now, before I let you go, Pete, we're a week out now from the conclusion of the Australia-India series. You know, people have talked about it as... you know, being one of the best series in Australia for many, many years, and obviously famous victory for India. How have you kind of reflected on the series quality and, I guess, where Australia went wrong?
Well, I think the achievement by India was one of the greatest achievements in the history of cricket.
Yep.
Without a doubt. I can see where India went right. Some of it was by accident and some of it was very much by design. They came up with bowling plans months out from the tour. They were very clever bowling plans. They ambushed Australia, and Australia's batsmen took a long time to respond to them. I think that was the design part of it. The other design part of it was having such great depth in their cricket now that they have batsmen and bowlers who are ready to go. And they've got suburbs full of them. Which is the sort of situation we were concerned might happen one day in India if they ever, you know, really got their act together about developing a team. Well, they've got their act together by the look of it. The thing that happened to them by accident was they just got refreshed constantly by injury. Normally it was knock you for six, but somehow, they made the most of a crisis rather than letting the crisis get on top of them. So that's what was part of their achievement, wasn't it? That's why it was such a significant achievement. The Australian batsmen were disappointing through the entire tour. You know, Marnus did all right, but all of them at times let the team down. All of them left runs out there when they should have got runs. And then the bowlers, well, The bowlers could have done better too, but they didn't have a lot to work with, and a lot was asked of them, of the same four people. Yeah,
I made the point last week, and Manners was so depressed after I made it, that this is a pretty good Australian side. Compared to all the sides I've seen, this is towards the upper echelons of those sides. Given that this side couldn't beat India, is this the sign
say it again.
The future? Like, we're not. When are we next going to beat India? That's my question.
Don't upset me again.
Look, I agree with you. Our enthusiasm at the start of this series for the way that Australian side looked on paper, and particularly when you got to Melbourne and Pekowski was brought in, outstanding. I mean, that is as good an Australian side as you'll ever see. But they can perform better. They should win that series.
Yeah.
If they'd have played better, they'd have won that series. So it's not all doom and gloom. I don't think that India B, the East side, whatever they are, they're certainly not India A. They're sort of lower than that in some respects. Always beat that Australian team. I think that Australian team underperformed as much as the Indian team overperformed.
Yeah. I'm sure that if they do meet each other in the World Test Championship final at Lord's, Australia will start with the bookmakers as favourite, which is bizarre, but that's how it'll be, I'd say.
Hopefully that is not the pattern of things to come. Hopefully Australia's batters show a little bit more determination. Don't leave runs out there like they did for the whole season. Hopefully the bowlers have a better series, and maybe next time they will be topped up.
Lyon not taking wickets at all certainly left a big hole too.
It did, yeah. The Indian batsman played him really well, didn't he? And it's funny because of the way he bowled in Adelaide, I was really looking forward to him bowling to Pujara for the whole series and just thinking how exciting it was going to be. This is Lyon at his peak and taking on India. But it was not to be, was it?
No.
You'll make a good point around how it was. The injuries in some ways, in a minor way, accidentally helped them. That Umesh Yadav and Mohammad Shami probably wouldn't have bowled as well as the replacements did bowl. And if Australia, if Mitchell Stark after the second test had properly done his, calf and we'd had to have Nisa brought in, it might have actually strengthened us a little bit as well.
Also, and the others, they came in, they all performed as you would expect test players to perform, and they all performed better than you'd expect people on their first tour to perform, their bowlers and guy. Look at Shubman Gill. I mean, he's bloody gold-plated. But the other thing that they brought was a handful of those guys out there in the fourth test were living the dream. They never imagined they were going to play test cricket. I mean, particularly a guy like Natarajan.
Yeah.
So he's feeling no weariness. He's feeling no, he's not worn down by months and months and months and months of biosecurity or the fact that the hotels are being closed on them in the last two tests. He's just thinking, geez, how good's this? So, I don't care. I'm playing test cricket. And they had that attitude, whereas the Australians just looked world weary, didn't they?
Yeah, and you compare that to...
That enthusiasm was lacking.
Yeah, and you compare that to, 2014-15 when Ishant Sharma sort of left the Gabba because he wasn't happy with the vegetarian food on offer and they were complaining about the warm-up pitches and Chika Darwin sort of retired hurt with no notice and they got the letter out of protest against the pitches. They seem to have a mindset change that they were nothing that on this tour that could sort of upset them, even though it probably should have.
Yeah, and that was all down to the leadership of Ravi Shastri, I think, in many ways. Well, not all down, but he set the tone for that tour. Yeah, encourage everybody to have a look at the team address that he did in the dressing room. I think the BCCI put that up after they won. And also to look at Ashwin's and Sridhar's video blog of the tour. Well, it's hard for Australians to watch Indians have so much fun at our expense. it's salutary. And don't be too inflamed. I think some of the subtleties of what he's saying and the fact that a lot of it's tongue-in-cheek is lost in the subtitles.
Well, I'm going to go and check it out. Well, Pete, thank you so much for joining us.
You might get angry, Andrew. You'll get angry.
I think I will be angry. Don't worry. I've got a lot of emotions swirling around. Thanks for joining us. That was the host of Cricket Etc., second best cricket podcast around.
And Pete, I do love test cricket.
A great cricketer, is that right?
Hey, I'm going to edit that out. See you, mate.
Yeah, I know you love Phil. Test cricket, Paul. Nice to chat, guys. I'm going back to bed. Good night.
See ya.
Good night.
Bye. Bye.
Great stuff there from Pete Lawler. We're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back with all the cricket headlines, including the thrilling conclusion to the regular season of the Big Bash. You're listening to the Cricket Unfiltered podcast with Menners and Paul. And let's get into the cricket headlines brought to you by Piccolo Podcast. Straight off the bat, a thrilling conclusion to the Big Bash regular season, going right down to the wire. There was a triple header on January 26th, and six of the teams were still alive going into the very last game. A fitting climax, Paul, to the competition so far.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. What did you think of the final game? And a lot of people are saying that it was made more exciting by the fact that the bonus point played such a significant factor in it. I'm not so sure. It was intriguing, but in some ways I would have preferred if it was just a normal T20 game without that factoring in. What did you think?
That wasn't my overall takeaway from that final game. I mean, so if you're just catching up, the Melbourne Stars had to beat the Sixers and get the bonus point to make the finals. They did not do either. But I was more disappointed with the way the Stars approached that game, not so much the actual rules. I, in fact, thought that, you know, the bonus point did open up a few more possibilities going into that last weekend of games. So whether you like it or not, it did have the intended sort of benefit of adding more talking points.
I thought it was strange how David Hussey, you might not have seen this because you probably watched it on Fox. I watched it on Seven, and he was interviewed by the Seven guys, and he said, oh, it kept me up till all night thinking about all the permutations, and implying that he put a lot of thought into it. And yet the result was that they didn't open with Glenn Maxwell. And later on in the broadcast, Michael Slater said, given you needed to score as many as possible in those first 10 overs, why wouldn't they have opened with Maxwell? To which he almost had to apologise for this being such a left-field suggestion. I mean, I found that bizarre. The only way they could possibly have made it was to have said, they are going to go for the 10-over score, the Sydney Sixers. It makes sense for them to do that because that's all they need to do. So we have to ensure that we, if anything, if we blow ourselves up and get 110 and we've lost 7 wickets off the first 10 overs, that's no good, but it's better than what they ended up doing.
They were out of it as soon as they lost that bonus point. So
exactly,
as you say, it didn't make sense what they were doing. So what the Stars did was they sort of meandered to 72 off their 10 overs. And it was a good toss for the Sixers to win. They won the toss and sent the Stars in. But as you say, they should have just gone hell for leather and tried to keep themselves in the game. And I'm not one to call for someone's job to be taken away from them, but I think there should be a review done of the way the Stars approached that game because it seemed to me like they just had no idea the rules.
Yeah, I agree. And but
David Hussey, I think, should be under the microscope.
I agree. And it amused me as well, the fact that Slater's logic as to why Maxwell should have opened because you want to get the highest possible total across your 10 overs is exactly the same logic I use as to why Maxwell should always open in a T20 game because you want the best player to have the most possible balls, especially given that he's got the 4-over power play at the beginning that sides still don't take advantage of. So, very, very peculiar.
So the Stars miss out, the Renegades miss out. But let's go back a couple of steps to the sort of beginning of this last round because 7 of the 8 teams were still in the hunt for the finals going to those last 4 games, which is the competition organizers' dream. And in the last round, the Thunder smashed the Adelaide Strikers by 9 wickets. Alex Hales hit 63 off 39. If I hear another pun like hailstorm or something like that, but it was a hailstorm of sixes at the Adelaide Oval, and the Thunder smashed the Strikers. That meant the Thunder were third on the ladder, and the Strikers needed the other results to fall their way to make the top 5 and then the final series. So that was the sort of January 25th game at night. Then on January 26th, we had the monster triple header. And in the first game, the Brisbane Heat defeated the Perth Scorchers and the Heat also grabbed the bonus point that propelled them into the finals. Chris Lynn smashed 51 off 25 deliveries, helping the Heat to 7 for 181. In reply, the Scorchers were 6 for 175. Mitch Marsh hit a dashing 54 off 26. to almost steal the game. And in fact, on the last ball of the game, the Scorchers needed 6 to tie and send the game into a super over. Ben Lachlan delivered a full toss outside off stump, but Mitch Marsh could not get it away. Therefore, the Heat win and go through into the finals. Quite a turnaround, I think, for the Heat, Paul, because sort of halfway through the competition, they were really struggling. They didn't look like they were going to be able to improve. They just didn't look like a good team. But now they're in the finals and with a good chance.
Yeah, we've been critical of them. And so congratulations to them and to Darren Lehman for getting them there. It's interesting looking at the table that they did finish on fourth, but they have, if you exclude the Renegades, who unfortunately had a pretty woeful season, the Brisbane Heat actually have the worst net run rate of all the other remaining sides. So if the... Obviously, the tally isn't done on net run rate, but it's in some ways a sort of a more accurate reflection of how everyone's going. It's interesting that the Heat on fourth have the worst net run rate, and the Sydney Thunder in third have the very best net run rate of the entire tournament. I think that the Sydney Thunder, they're the third favourites, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if they actually ended up winning the competition.
I agree. And then in the second game of the triple header, the Hurricanes melted down against the Renegades and torpedoed their own Big Bash season. The Renegades made 5 for 150, and the Canes looked to be going well. They needed about 80 off the last 10 overs. They had plenty of wickets in hand, and then they collapsed to 9 for 139. Zach Evans, the young Victorian quick playing for the Renegades, took 5 for 33, and the Canes lost the game, and that's it for them. Big Bash done. Very surprising considering they started well. They've got a lot of talent in that team. But really, once they left a Hobart and stopped getting all those home games, they just couldn't win enough games.
It was weird because I left the TV. I had to do something when they were looking like they were uncomfortable. Came back to see that they were all but out the gate. It was a... must have been a peculiar 20 or 30 minutes.
Yeah, it was. It was almost like the game just drifted a little bit. Darcy Short and Darwood Milan both went at... Well, Darwood Milan went at a strike rate of under 100, 34 of 36, and same with Short, 29 of 32. I felt they just took it a bit easy. They started hitting the fielders a lot, and the run rate required spiralled. And the Renegades got a... well, a morale-boosting victory to end their very, 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 very disappointing Big Bash campaign.
And how come... sorry to interrupt.
No.
How come Payne wasn't in the side? I mean, he's there and available, carrying the drinks. I mean, Payne batted sublimely during the Test series. Jax has got a very disappointing record this time around. Why wouldn't you have just played Payne?
Yeah, not sure. Not sure why they didn't play Payne. And you're right, it's strange that you have the Aussie Test captain there not playing.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, that he should have been on a beach somewhere. I mean, we're looking ahead to the tour of South Africa. The last time we were there, Smith was burnt out and, you know, lots of bad things happened. After such a stressful series, they should have said, if you're not going to play him, at least tell him in advance and let him spend 2 weeks lying somewhere on a beach.
I wonder if Matt Wade had the pleasure of telling his own Test captain that he wasn't playing. Payne's like, well, either are you.
But it is crazy that they would say, no, well, we can't play Payne because he's a specialist wicketkeeper and we've already got Wade as the keeper. Surely that's not what their thinking was.
No, I mean, Payne used to open the batting for the Hurricanes and do it very well.
Yeah, and Wade a few weeks before was a specialist batsman. They're very strange.
And then in the final game of the night, as we touched on, the Stars completely botched it up and they plummet out of the competition. The Stars made 6 for 177. Good finish. Glenn Maxwell batted well. But the real problem was in the first 10 overs, as we said before. They laboured to 72. Seb Gotch, 15 off 13. Larkin, 12 off 18. It seemed like they had no idea of the overall situation. And what I don't understand is, so Stoinis goes early and Gotch is with him. You don't send Larkin out. You've got to send another hitter. If you're going to play it so you have one sort of anchor and one hitter, when your hitter gets out and you need to score in the first 10 overs, send your other hitter out. I mean, Gotch and Larkin was the worst combination imaginable for the Stars. And considering the season rested on it, it's a massive stuff-up.
Absolutely, it's a massive stuff-up. And also, and I know I go on about this, but this was the time, if you were ever going to have a pinch hitter, that... pick a bowler who is otherwise not going to get an opportunity to bat, or if he does, it's going to be right near at the end, who can swing, and put in two or three of them if you need to. That's when you can...
Nathan Coulter-Nile.
Exactly, yes. Hey, I mean, you could have done a lot worse than open with Maxwell and Coulter-Nile.
And in the end, the Sixers actually won the game. Siri Dan Christian chased it down, smashing 49 not out of 23 deliveries. So both Melbourne teams miss out on the finals for the first time in the competition's history, and so do the Hurricanes. That means the finals are shaping up as that we have the eliminator, so the first knockout game between the Brisbane Heat and the Adelaide Strikers on Friday the 29th of January at the Gabba. And then the day after at Marnica Oval, the Sixers host the Scorchers. The winner of that game goes straight through to the grand final. And the Thunder that day will host the winner of the Heat and the Strikers. And that's where the sort of things start off. And, yeah, I think we're up for some ripping games.
Yeah, I had a look at the sort of the market and just here are the odds percentage-wise. Tell me if you agree with this. According to those, the Scorchers, a 41% chance of winning the tournament. Sixers, 35. Thunder, 13. Heat, 6%. And Strikers, 5%. Do you take issue with any of that?
I'm just wondering why the Scorchers have 6% more chance than the Sixers, considering the Sixers finished on the top of the table with one more win and have hosting rights.
Well, I think because the Scorchers have finished much better than the Sixers. The Scorchers have a significantly better net run rate. The Sydney Sixers' home ground advantage playing at Marnica is going to be fairly neutered. And I just think there's a feeling that the Scorchers right at this moment are the team to beat.
Yeah, I mean, they have a very, very strong bowling lineup, the Scorchers. That's what struck me after a few games when it was clear Jai Richardson, Andrew Tai and Jason Berendorf were all actually fit. It's really changed the look of their team. So
I think I was going to say it's their batting lineup that impresses me. You've got, was it Livingston and opens Roy. Up with Roy, and then you've got classic hits the whole way down. They've got Inglis. Who have they also got? Mitchell Marsh. Who am I forgetting?
Ashton Turner.
That's him, Ashton Turner. He's played a few little nice innings now. Nothing major, but he's getting there.
So I think in that first game, the Heat and the Strikers, probably slightly tipping the Heat at home. I think the Strikers are really missing Rashid Khan in those middle overs with the ball.
Yeah, massively. Once again, and I harp on this, but the spin bowlers were the dominant bowlers. I had a look at the best economy rates in the Big Bash for anyone who's bowled 20 overs or more. Majeeb, 6.26. And Berendorf, an exception, 6.69. Rashid Khan, 6.87. Zahir Khan, 6.93. Jai Richardson, another quick, 7.08. Imad Wazim, 7.15. O'Keefe, 7.17. Menenti, 7.22. Another quick, Worrell, 7.29. Zampa, 7.35. It's absolutely, utterly spin bowler dominated. Again, why are sides still going in with predominantly pace attacks when it's all about spin?
Yeah, I'm waiting for a team to go in with your tactic of all spin bowlers. Is Hatsulloglu on those stats? Anyway, Shane Warne was talking him up on the coverage last night, saying he thinks he's got a big future in T20 cricket.
Yeah, he bowled well. I wouldn't necessarily say you go with all spin, but rather than sort of saying, okay, let's go with all quicks and Rashid Khan, for example, if I was the Scorchers, or maybe not the Scorchers because they've got a good attack, but it's like going with all spinners and Peter Siddle or something like that, you know, one really good quick, maybe that's a way to consider it.
All right, so the finals get underway this weekend. Going to be thrilling stuff. Some news about the Big Bash. Cricket Australia is in discussions about setting up an international draft for next year's Big Bash. So players that are already signed with clubs or have existing relationships like a Rashid Khan, you know, they can go back to their clubs like the Adelaide Strikers, but then they're talking about sort of all new international players going into a draft and then say the team like the Renegades who finish bottom of the table then gets the first pick of the international players next year. They were really hoping to get that underway for this season, but with the COVID-19 pandemic, they weren't able to do it. But I really like the idea of an international draft.
I think it's a good idea. It's what other sports do, partially just to try to get themselves in the news cycle, even when the tournament's not going. And so for a day or two in the lead up to it, and then and the television event itself, it brings cricket into the limelight, and it could be quite entertaining to watch.
That's right. And it's good for the teams that might finish lower in the table. They can get in a star player to give them a boost for the next summer. All right, speaking of star players, well, there's been a raft of Aussies axed from their IPL teams. I forecasted this after the IPL, considering there was a lot of disappointing performances from the Australians. So here are all the players axed. Alex Carey, Glenn Maxwell, Chris Green, Steve Smith has been axed by the Royals, Aaron Finch axed by Royal Challengers Bangalore, Billy Stanley axed, and the last two, Nathan Coulton-Ayler and James Pattinson, were both axed by the Mumbai Indians despite winning the IPL. They can't have done much more, and they both played an integral part, but you know the big ones there are Maxwell, Smith and Finch, all gone.
It's not quite as cutting, to pardon the pun, as it sounds, because you do get the option at the auction then. If another side buys a player that you've cut, you have the option of matching their price and still getting them back. So you kind of have a second bite at the charity. If you think you've just paid a little bit too much for someone, you risk putting them back on the open market and then try to get them back at a cheaper price. There's also that possibility as well.
So, yeah, big news in the IPL. Staying on Glenn Maxwell and Aaron Finch, a report came out from News Corp's Tom Morris last week that Aaron Finch and Glenn Maxwell are unlikely to play red ball cricket for Victoria anymore, that Cricket Victoria are looking at bringing the younger players and Maxwell and Finch no more shield cricket. A stunning development when you consider Glenn Maxwell probably still has test aspirations.
I hope this can't be right. This surely can't be right. If that's the case, I think that's just ridiculous from Victoria. I mean, that as you say, Maxwell has test aspirations for sure. And what's the point? The Sheffield Shield's meant to be the best players playing. Surely, if someone is in your best side, why wouldn't you want to pick him in order to win the competition? Plus, we've often said that one of the strengths of the Sheffield Shield used to be that you'd have these older players still playing, and so it was very, very tough and, a high-quality competition. If they are going to have an opportunity to not pick Glenn Maxwell especially and going into a Shield game and pick someone else, whomever they pick will not be as good and Victoria will not have as good a chance of winning the game. Who cares what the future holds? The future is now. I hope this is not true. I can't express how much I think this is ridiculous.
The next headline, the former NRL boss, that's National Rugby League, Todd Greenberg, will be appointed as the new chief executive of the Australian Cricketers Association. Greenberg has a background in cricket, starting his career in sports administration at Cricket New South Wales. I think this is a good appointment, and I think it also shows that maybe Nick Hockley is firming as being the full-time Cricket Australia CEO, because I would have thought Greenberg would be in the running for the big job at CA, but if he's taken this job, maybe that's not going to be available.
Yeah, I think it's a good appointment as well, and it shows what the NRL's like, that I think this is a nice, relaxing appointment. You know, one of the most stressful jobs in Australian sport probably is being in charge of the Australian Cricketers Association, but it's 10 times less stressful than being in charge of the NRL, the crazy madcap tournament competition that is, you know, it keeps on reinventing itself, and there's scandals galore, and you'd sort of think that being in charge of that, you'd age every 10 years every one, so it'd be nice, relaxing to be just in charge of the ACA.
I love the article in the Daily Telegraph, I think it was by Ben Horn, that suggested that perhaps the traditional power base of cricket that's been in Melbourne since CA moved there in the mid-90s is starting to shift from Melbourne to Sydney, with Nick Hockley living in Sydney, Todd Greenberg living in Sydney, Greg Dyer, who's the chairman of the ACA, Australian Cricket, also in Sydney. Perhaps we're seeing a bit of a move away from the sort of Melbourne-centric Cricket Australia organisation.
Well, I hope that Greenberg peppers his language with rugby league references to redress some of the Aussie rules talk, you know, talking about, you know, we need a couple of tough players up front to do the hard yards for us and all this sort of stuff. It'd be bring back some balance. Next headline concerns the Australian upcoming tour or scheduled tour of South Africa, and that is that Cricket Australia has, it's been revealed, been indicating that they want to get all of the Australian players vaccinated before that tour. This has produced a mild level of controversy because there's the predictable response, not necessarily incorrect response, but a predictable response of people saying, well, surely we should be making sure that our frontline healthcare workers are vaccinated first before a couple of highly paid sports people. I tend to look at it sort of with what I hope is a slightly more nuanced view on that, and that is surely they can vaccinate the, what is it, 20 people or whatever that will be needed without compromising the vaccines of any essential workers as well, that you can just I think it would make sense for them to be vaccinated, given they're going to a country that is absolutely overrun with coronavirus. But you wouldn't want it at the expense of any frontline workers.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there, Paul. And the final headline is that despite Channel 7 and Cricket Australia having some real difficulties with their broadcast arrangement, Channel 7 should be so happy with the ratings from the India-Australia Test Series. The last day of the fourth test reached 3.68 million people on Channel 7 and peaked at 1.8 million watching at once. Just an incredible ratings for Channel 7. And it was also the most watched test series ever on pay TV. So tremendous stuff, and shows cricket still grabs the nation like no other sport.
That last day, it really did have a sort of a feeling that you don't often get, where it felt like this has really crossed over into the... I mean, cricket is mainstream, but this is the ultra, ultra mainstream. I always remember the 2005 Ashes getting a message from someone who I didn't even know knew that cricket existed, indicating they were watching the Edgbaston Test match. Didn't quite reach that level, but it was up there. Just a pity there wasn't a fifth Test match.
And that's it for the Cricket Headlines, brought to you by Piccolo Podcasts. If you've got a moment, head on to social media on Twitter and Instagram and follow Cricket Unfiltered at Oz Cricket Pod. That's AUS Cricket Pod. Or you can head to TikTok, or on TikTok as Cricket Unfiltered. All right, we're going to take a break then. I'm going to be back. I caught up last week with Lisa Griffiths, who's a Sydney Sixers WBBL player. She's also a captain of the New South Wales Breakers side when Elisa Healy's not available. And she's just started the New South Wales Female Apprenticeship Coaching Program. So she's going to join the show after the break. Welcome back to the show. Men is here, and in groundbreaking news for cricket in this country, Cricket New South Wales has launched its first elite coaching apprenticeship program specifically designed for women. And following an interview process, three women were selected for the program: Sixers stalwart Sarah Ailey, Breakers and Sixers all-rounder Lisa Griffith, and recent Breakers squad member Hannah Trithui. And joining me now to discuss it is Lisa Griffith, who has played 39 WBBL games and has captained the New South Wales Breakers when Elisa Healy has been unavailable. Lisa, welcome to the podcast. You must be thrilled to get the coaching apprenticeship.
Yeah, I'm amongst some great company, along with Hannah Trithui and Sarah Ailey, you know, both very good cricketers in themselves. So I'm very lucky to be one of the three that's been able to receive this internship, and I'm really excited to get on board with Cricket New South Wales and learn the ropes.
Yeah, so for the listeners out there, you know, you play for the New South Wales Breakers, you play for the Sydney Sixers. Tell me, you know, is this something that you feel is needed for the game, for, you know, the female coaching to improve with the players?
100%. I think the recent stats that have come out, 30% of all individuals in the game now are female. And so I think the demand there is similar for, you know, coaches and umpires and support staff in the game, that, you know, that number rise along with the players. So, yeah, I think, you know, it's been a long time coming, but it's awesome that it's happening, and there's no time like the present for it to be happening. And, you know, I'm really fortunate to be on board with an organisation such as Cricket New South Wales that have put this in place.
Absolutely. It is such a good opportunity. And you're right, New South Wales cricket, they're groundbreakers in women's cricket. You know, what they did with the Breakers, going professional first. And what exactly, you know, is involved with the apprenticeship?
Yeah, so it's a 10-month internship, and it'll require so many hours of me a week. At the moment, I'm currently at a game. I'm at a training for the under-19s female metro team, which is really exciting. They're just getting some centre wicket stuff happening. And, yeah, just every available opportunity that I get within Cricket New South Wales to do some work. I'm really interested in doing some work in the male space as well. And just people that I really look up to are people like coaches like Shelley Nitschke, who, you know, they've worked with the under-19. She went away with the under-19 Australian men's team, and just really, you know, forward-thinking women who are working in, you know, all areas of cricket. And I think that's really important. You know, as a female player, I've had lots of male coaches coach me, and I've had some great female male coaches, and I'm forever thankful for them. But I think it's really important that that is vice versa as well, and females are coaching males, and that's the new norm. So I'm really excited to actually be, you know, one of the first people that might be able to do that. And I'm fortunate.
Yeah, absolutely. You can see it a little bit in the Sixers organization. Their coaches move between the male and female teams a bit, and I think it's certainly something that we need to see more of. Do you sort of notice any difference when you work with a male or a female coach?
100%. I think, you know, I often get asked, are female players different to male players? And 100%. As much as some people might not like that, you know, we're different people. We're different. We play the game differently. And I think, you know, as a female, I probably see the game a little bit differently to a male coach. And, you know, it was funny, Dom Thornley come back into the Breakers environment, having just been with the second 11 group over the Christmas period, because he doesn't coach a Big Bash team, a WBBL team. And he kind of come back and he said, oh, I wasn't prepared for how quick the men bowl again. And, you know, having played his whole career and, you know, went back to the male environment and they just bowl a lot quicker. But similarly, you know, we have some other avenues to, you know, we play our cricket, we don't quite have the strength there. So we've developed other avenues of scoring runs. I think certainly over the last 12 to 24 months, we've also seen a massive increase in strength and, you know, and athleticism within the women's game as well. So that's coming along nicely. But I definitely feel like we do see things differently, and I think it's important that those views are, like I said before, put both into the men's and the women's game.
Yeah, definitely. And is it sort of your ambition now to sort of coach in the WBBL eventually, or do you have a sort of goal? I know it's hard while you're playing.
I mean, I'd love to be able to do the Big Bash one day. I'd love to be able to, you know, as high as I can soar, I'd love to be able to do that. I've got a lot. I've definitely got a lot to learn. And, you know, as in the playing space as well, I've got to transform with the game, and it's moving rapidly fast, as you know, the female game. And so I've got to move with that as a player. And I think that'll really help me as a coach. I've got a lot to learn, but I look forward to doing that. And I look forward to giving back to this sport that has given me so much over the last, well, I'm 28 now, so yeah, nearly my whole life, it's given me so much. I look forward to be able to give back and pay my dues a little bit, if you like.
Yeah, it's a wonderful story. I've read, you know, how you took a 5-year break from the game and then you've come back to it. Now tell me, what was your first season with the Sixers like?
I loved it. I love the brand of cricket that they play. I loved watching the Thunder do well, don't get me wrong. There was a little bit of me that was like, oh, like, I'd love to have a win under my belt. Mm. But it didn't take away from the fact that I loved playing at the Sixers. I love playing with a professional outfit that know the game so well. But mostly I just loved the attacking brand of cricket that the Sixers are about. And that was the reason why I, you know, come across to the Sixers. And I love that we play an attacking brand of cricket. We kind of live by the sword and die by the sword, and we pride ourselves on the attacking brand of cricket that we play. So that's something that I've needed to transform my game, and hopefully I can continue to play with them and learn those ropes.
Yeah, you got some good players around you, that's for sure. You know, last question then, putting your coaching hat on, you know, when you look at the Sixers WBBL season, do you know where it kind of went wrong? Do you know, have you sort of been able to pinpoint some of the elements that meant you didn't make the finals again?
Yeah, it's an interesting conversation, and I've had a fair bit of chats with Ben and my teammates and things like that. I think there was a few key moments of catches that we dropped, and no one means to drop catches, but I think they hurt us, and I think that we kind of bowled lengths that people were prepared for. People were prepared for what, you know, for the few years previously that that's the kind of what we delivered, and people were kind of anticipating that. Other teams were anticipating that, and that's kind of what they got. And so they were ready for us, and we didn't move with the game.
Yeah, right.
if that makes sense. So we didn't transform our bowling. We probably didn't bowl very well at the death, and that probably cost us a little bit. But in saying that, we had some really, really nice moments. We've got some young players coming through that are doing an excellent job. And I have no doubt next year that we can go and kill it and do really well. We've identified those key areas that we probably fell down a little bit in. And, I have no doubt we can come back a lot bigger and better next year.
Lisa, well, thank you so much for your time. Congratulations and best of luck with the internship.
Perfect. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much to Lisa Griffiths for coming on the podcast. And now it's time to finish the show the way we always do with Can't Let It Go, that little bit of cricket news you just can't let go through to the keeper. So, Paul, what's that bit of cricket news you just can't let go?
In the last 6 months, my affection for Dan Christian has just skyrocketed. I've always just kind of thought of him as, yeah, good all-rounder, but just started to gradually realise what a great player he is in the T20 format. And the other day, when they had the list of hobbies that they have up on Channel 7, they have, you know, five questions they ask the players, and he actually had an interest that was outside the prescribed limits of cricket. As a cricketer, you know, you're only allowed to be interested in golf, potentially horse racing.
Tennis.
Steve Smith's allowed, but I don't think anyone else is, and football. Dan Christian's interested in chess, and he plays chess. And I just thought, this is awesome. Slater and Fleming were like, what? And Slater's like, do you really like chess? And I don't know whether that's because he thought, you know, you shouldn't like chess as a cricketer, or I wouldn't have thought you liked chess. I hope he didn't think it was because he thought chess was boring. And Christian said, yeah, I used to play chess all the time at school. And I just thought, that's fantastic. Broadening the interest level beyond the normal level. Dan Christian, love him. He should be in the Australia's World Cup side.
Chess has got quite a resurgence in the last few months. I don't know if you've seen the Netflix show The Queen's Gambit, Paul, but
it's on my list to watch.
You would love it. And I did hear Christian saying that was part of the inspiration. And I think there's a few chessboards floating around the hubs at the moment. I can only imagine what it'd be like to be a fly in the wall trying to teach some of his teammates the rules of chess. All right, my can't let it go is not great news that. The ICC has found two UAE players guilty of attempted match fixing during the T20 World Cup qualifiers in 2019, and it is very disappointing. And I just think this whole thing is really messy, and it's sad to me that this is still going on in world cricket. Right, well, that's it for this edition of Cricket Unfiltered. Thanks so much to Lisa and Pete for joining us. Thanks to all the listeners, and we'll be back next week.
Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.